You're listening to The Record on KUOW, and I'm David Hyde with Ross Reynolds. During the Cold War, American military leaders and average citizens were often kept awake at night, worrying about a possible nuclear strike by the Soviet Union. And U.S. foreign policy continues to focus on nuclear programs in other countries like North Korea or Iran. But our guest today says the nuclear threat has sometimes been closer to home. During the Cold War, nuclear weapons intended to protect Americans nearly detonated here on U.S. soil. Investigative reporter Eric Schlosser's new book is Command and Control: Nuclear Weapons, the Damascus Accident, and the Illusion of Safety. His other books include Fast Food Nation and Reefer Madness. And Eric Schlosser joins us now. Eric Schlosser, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So I want to start with this chilling incident that you uncovered that occurred in 1961, where the U.S. Air Force nearly detonated an atomic bomb over North Carolina. What happened?
And it was a hydrogen bomb. It was a massively powerful weapon. There was a B-52 bomber on a routine flight. It developed a fuel leak. There was an imbalance then in the fuel tanks on the wings. And the plane began to break apart over North Carolina. And as it was breaking apart, the centrifugal forces pulled a lanyard in the cockpit. And that was the lanyard that one of the crew members would pull on to release one of the bombs over an enemy target. So the hydrogen bomb had no idea that it was over North Carolina. It went through all the steps it was supposed to do to detonate. And the parachute opened. It floated to the ground, its nose hit the ground in North Carolina, and the firing signal was sent. And there was one switch, one safety switch, that prevented a full-scale detonation. But that safety switch was later found to be defective. It had failed on at least 30 different occasions. It was later replaced. But more importantly, when an airplane like that is breaking apart, there are all kinds of wires with electricity. And if the wires had crossed with the arming line of the bomb would have been fully armed, it would have detonated, there would have been firestorms in North Carolina, and it would have been inconvenient because John F. Kennedy has just been inaugurated as president a few days earlier, and a lot of the optimism of the new frontier might have dimmed quite quickly.
Eric Schlosser's new book is Command and Control. So in this particular incident, how close were people in North Carolina and surrounding states to being hit with a major nuclear attack, essentially,
they
on U.S.
soil
by American nuclear weapons?
They were protected by a single switch that the Air Force eventually realized should not be in their bombers because it was inadequate as a switch. It was a switch that was defective, and they were protected simply by the good fortune that when all these wires were getting pulled apart in the bomber as it was coming apart, that the arming line didn't get electricity to it.
How many cases like this one did you uncover in researching this book?
You know, the Department of Defense has put out a list of 32 broken arrows, which they consider nuclear weapons accidents serious enough to threaten the public. And what I found is that that's a small proportion of the number of serious accidents that actually occurred. On the Pentagon list, there are a number of plane crashes that actually never posed any real risk of a nuclear detonation because the weapons weren't fully assembled. And I found many, many cases that don't appear on the list. One document that I got through the Freedom of Information Act was a report by the Sandia National Laboratory, one of our weapons labs, and it mentioned 1,200 nuclear weapons involved in significant accidents from 1950 to 1968.
Eric Schlosser's new book is Command and Control, Nuclear Weapons, the Damascus Accident, and the Illusion of Safety. And I actually want to ask about the Damascus accident in a minute, but I also just want to ask about why you think it's so important to write a book like this, uncovering all of these near accidents during the Cold War on our part, you know, where we didn't necessarily have control of our own nuclear arsenal.
Well, you know, for me, the two great existential threats that this country faces are global warming and nuclear weapons. And nuclear weapons have sort of receded from the national consciousness. And there's a great historical amnesia. And the story of the nuclear weapon accident that I tell that occurred in Damascus, Arkansas, just serves as a really good narrative way of illustrating some of these bigger themes about nuclear weapons. And the information in the book is information the government did not release, that the government often lied about. There was a great deal of disinformation and misinformation about our own weapons. And the great irony is, and I found this out in my research, that countries that choose to have nuclear weapons may be at greater risk from their own weapons than from those of their alleged adversaries.
So is that a technological problem, a problem with nuclear weapons themselves? What's the underlying problem that you're uncovering here?
We're very good at building complex technological systems, and we're not as good at controlling them or managing them. And nuclear weapons are very complex machines, and like every machine ever invented by man, they go wrong. And when they go wrong, the consequences can be unimaginably bad. I mean, toaster ovens catch on fire, your car breaks down, commercial airliners go wrong, and it's tragic when one crashes. But the consequences of an accidental detonation of a nuclear weapon or of a major plutonium scattering incident would just be terrible.
And it's a riveting story that you tell about what happens in Damascus, Arkansas, starting with a kind of a minor incident, seemingly.
Yeah.
What happened?
Again and again, you see in these accidents that relatively trivial events can set in motion very, very serious risks. In this case, in September of 1980, there was a repairman working in a Titan II missile silo in Damascus, Arkansas, just doing routine maintenance on a steel platform. The Titan II was the biggest missile the United States ever built, about the size of a 10-story building, and the warhead on top of it was the most powerful warhead we ever put on a missile. It was that one warhead in that silo was three times more powerful than all the bombs used by all the armies in the Second World War, including both atomic bombs. So the worker is just working in the silo, drops a socket, it bounces off his steel work platform, he tries to grab it, misses. It falls through this very narrow gap in between the steel work platform and the missile, falls about 70 feet, bounces off the silo, hits the missile. And when it hits the missile, it rips a hole in the metal skin of the missile, and suddenly thousands of gallons of highly toxic, highly flammable explosive rocket fuel is filling the silo. And the Air Force literally had no idea what to do. And the narrative is about how they try to figure out how to save the missile, prevent an explosion, and possibly prevent a nuclear detonation in Arkansas. And there was remarkable heroism on the part of young airmen. And one of the other themes of the book are the stories of young men, you know, 18, 20, 22 years old, who throughout the Cold War risked their lives and often lost them trying to prevent a war with the Soviet Union or trying to prevent a nuclear catastrophe.
Eric Schlosser is with us talking about his new book, Command and Control. And since we're in Washington State, I have to ask, have there been any similar incidents here? Do you have any concerns about nuclear weapons being controlled successfully in our state?
Well, one of the other narratives in my book is the effort to make nuclear weapons safer, beginning really in 1945 to the present day. And the unfortunate thing I have to say to the residents of Seattle is in 1991, Congress appointed an eminent panel of physicists to study the safety of our arsenal. And the only weapons in use today that gave that panel great concern 20 years ago are the weapons currently put on the Triton II missiles. In order to get as many warheads as possible onto these missiles and send them as far as possible and have them detonate as explosively as possible during the Cold War, these Trident II missiles have an unusual design. Instead of having the warheads on top of the missile, the warheads surround the third stage rocket engine. And the fuel that was used in that rocket engine is liable to explode if it's dropped, if the rocket engine gets hit by a bullet. And when you have that many warheads around the rocket engine, you have the potential for a small-scale nuclear detonation or for large-scale plutonium scattering. So at that sub-base in Bangor, they really need to be very careful about how they load and unload those missiles and how they load and unload those warheads. This was raised as a serious concern 20 years ago. It's never been addressed, and I have no doubt that should we build a new class of submarine-based ballistic missiles, They'll make some significant changes in the rocket fuel and perhaps even in the explosives in the warhead, because it's a real danger.
I have just about a minute left, but how does the president, were you to advise him, go about making the world a safer place than it is today when it comes to controlling nuclear weapons moving forward?
I think the president is terrific on this issue, but he has no support from the public because it's an issue people haven't thought about for 20, 30 years. Ultimately, we can argue about how many nuclear weapons we should have, whether we should abolish them. But this research really has led me to believe if we're going to have these weapons, we must spare no expense in making sure they're safe, making sure they're managed properly, and making sure they can't detonate by accident.
Eric Schlosser, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
His book is Command and Control, Nuclear Weapons, the Damascus Accident, and the Illusion of Safety. And Eric Schlosser will be speaking tonight at 7 p.m. at Seattle's Public Library. You're listening to The Record on KUOW, and I'm David Hyde with Ross Reynolds.